Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
The judge is going to look at what the industry standard is. That's going to be a determining factor in any litigation. If you're in excess of what, quote unquote, an industry standard would be, they're going to deem that as predatory lending.
Best ever listeners, before we get into today's episode, I want to mention Trevor McGregor. Trevor is a real estate results coach. I've been paying him and working with him for years now. He actually is responsible for giving me the idea to do a podcast. So it's not only about transactions that he gives advice on, how to find more deals, how to make more money, but also how to build a holistic plan around your real estate entrepreneurship endeavors. That's what I love about working with Trevor, that and being held accountable for what I say I'm gonna do and actually making sure that I follow through and do it. I feel like I'm a pretty results-oriented, accountable kind of person, but it's always nice to have someone who's there guiding you along the way and giving you strategy as well as psychology tips for how to deal with, you know, the things that come up as a real estate entrepreneur. Trevor has made a wonderful offer for the best ever listeners, and that is that he's offering a free coaching session. Go to coachwithtrevor.com. That's coachwithtrevor.com. Highly recommend him. I've worked with him before. I'm currently working with him right now as my business, as my real estate investing coach. Highly recommend you do the same. Take him up on his offer. Get a free coaching session. coachwithtrevor.com. Hi, best ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairless, and this is a show where we cut out all that fluffy stuff. We don't get into it. We talk only about the real estate insights that move your business forward. We've spoken to Jay Papasan, the author of The One Thing with Gary Keller, Robert Kiyosaki. You know who Robert Kiyosaki is. Barbara Corcoran, one of the stars on Shark Tank, and many other best ever guests. And today, we're going to be speaking with Jamie Seaton. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nice to have you on the show, and a little bit about Jamie, and then she'll get into it in more detail. She began her career in 2000 as a property manager based in Auburn, California. And then in 2002, she got her appraiser's license and serviced Northern California for 7 years. Since 2009, she's been a hard money consultant. Not a hard money lender, but a hard money consultant. She'll talk about that, where she advises investors, brokers, and borrowers. You can say hi to her at dcuprivatemoney.com. That's dcuprivatemoney.com, or you can just click the link in the show notes. That's a lot easier. With that being said, Jamie, you want to give the best ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Absolutely. Thank you. As you stated, I'm a consultant for hard money brokers, lenders, and borrowers. And how that happened is I was working as a hard money processor in about 2010. And my father and a group of investors that he worked with, all in their 80s, they believed in a broker that misrepresented information, and together they lost almost $1 million. And that was a changing point in my career and my life, meeting with these investors that would never be able to remake the money that they had lost because they put the faith in someone. And right after that, I left my job and I created DCU, which helps to educate brokers on compliance and regulations in which they should follow, borrowers on how to look through what a broker represents to make sure that it's not an issue of predatory lending, and lenders to review the investment offering to make sure that the most forward information is being presented to secure their investment.
Will you repeat the lenders part? I'm taking notes. I was trying to type as fast as possible.
Not a problem. Basically, it's diligence, if you will, go through the presentation or the offering to the lender to make sure that there is not anything that has been missed, to make sure it's comfortable and as providing investment as it can be.
I'd like to talk about the story on the broker misrepresenting the information, and then we'll get into each of these three, because I know there's a lot to talk about within each of these three categories: brokers, borrowers, lenders. What was the information that was misrepresented that cost your father and his friends up to $1 million?
It was my father, Lezick. I use him as my example for the past 6-7 years. He thinks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Poor salt and wound, right?
Right. It was my father and it was some investors that he did not have a relationship with them. Basically, the mortgage broker at the moment comprised a loan where the loan amount was around $1 million. She put 10 people in that loan. All 10 people were married. So there was 20 people together in the loan. She stated that permits had been obtained for the development of a property, which they had not. She used an appraisal from an appraiser that she had a relationship with that completely inflated the repair value. It was nowhere close to what that property could actually heed. Because all of these investors had a relationship with her and had a positive return record as of that moment, they didn't question the information that was being presented. They accepted what she provided them and decided to do the transaction. Well, the county in which the transaction was done, it's very hard to obtain permits. It's very hard to have plans approved, especially to the scale that this borrower was trying to achieve. So that transaction went into foreclosure. When they went to regain their loss, they were stuck with nothing. It was a piece of land that you couldn't build on. And they lost on that big time. And it was really sad meeting with people in their 80s with tears in their eyes, stating how that was money to go to their grandkids or to go to their children for their college, or just money that had a purpose and a place. And a lot of these people, this wasn't that long ago, 6 years ago, they passed before even receiving a payment on that loan. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
It is.
The permits that had been allegedly obtained were stated, but then there was no paper trail, or was there a fraudulent paper trail?
There was no paper trail at all. Okay. She never provided the information.
And then the appraisal overinflated the what numbers?
Oh, the after repair value or after completion value.
Okay.
So there was the vacant land, which had a very accurate value. And then there was the proposed project that was stated to have the approved plans, which were not. And based off of that project, there is a value. But the appraiser went to neighborhoods that had a much superior market appeal and desirability and used those to assess the value. So it was overvalued by about $300,000.
What are the repercussions that can take place, or repercussions that can take place against the mortgage broker in this case?
The mortgage broker ended up losing her license, but that's it. She took advantage of a lot of investors who trusted her, and this wasn't the only investment project that received a loss, and she lost her license, and that was it. No lawsuit. even in the event of a lawsuit, I don't know how far it would go. She also filed bankruptcy and then she disappeared, literally disappeared. Nobody knows where she is.
Well, maybe there's a hap. Well, I don't know about that. I don't want to wish harm on anybody, so never mind. I won't go there. All right. So let's talk about each of these three: brokers, borrowers, and lenders, and the education and consulting you give them to make sure a transaction like this doesn't happen on either one of these ends. So with brokers, regulations they should follow. What regulations should all hard money brokers follow?
Well, it's hard to just give an answer to that because it depends on the type of transaction and the duration of transaction and the experience of the borrower. But one of the main things with hard money lending is there's a fine line between a business purpose transaction and a consumer lending transaction. Business purpose transaction is the opposite of a consumer lending, which means that it's not a transaction in which the loan funds are used for personal benefit or personal use. The documentation and the review that is required to confirm the nature of the transaction so that you have all of the exemptions under RESPA, Truth in Lending, all of that fun stuff, are detrimental to any broker's transactions so that they can confirm, and you know, during an audit, they're not going to get fined, or during any type of litigation, they're not going to be sitting in front of a judge and the judge saying, hey, why'd you do this? This doesn't make sense. So it basically has to do with the underwriting of the transaction from the information presented by the borrower to confirm that they have the accurate exemptions.
And what about the borrowers? When a borrower comes to you and says, hey, I'd like some help to make sure I'm following the right process and things are on the up and up, what do you do with them as far as, you know, you'd mentioned the issue of predatory lending?
It depends on, again, everything is subjective. So it depends on the borrower's needs. There are different borrowers that come into need of hard money lending because they're looking to have all of their transaction financed. Those borrowers aren't usually basing their need of money on what their profit will be on a completed project. What I do is they get a proposal from a lender or from a broker. I review it with them because it's amazing. Some lenders will charge 15% interest rate. In California, Northern California, there is such a demand and need for borrowers because there's a lot more people out there wanting to put forth money and invest money, that that's just a ludicrous rate. It's unneeded. So I go through the proposal provided to the borrower from a broker and make sure it's not nothing that is in excess of what the industry standard would be.
And what's the industry standard right now?
Again, subjective.
How about this? Since there's so many subjectivities, how about we just go through one scenario?
Okay.
That way we're specific.
Okay.
So you can pick.
So a typical scenario, 70% purchase of a fix and flip property. Right now, I'm going to say Sacramento because I'm about an hour east of Sacramento. A borrower that has the experience and a portfolio showing that they have fix and flipped properties and confirming the objective that they're presenting, which is to purchase and rehab a property and then resell it. A borrower such as that at a 70% LTV, it's very easy to obtain 10% financing on that. Brokers will sometimes come through, want to charge 13% and 5 points. That, to me, is predatory lending because it's in excess of what the industry standard is.
With the excess of what industry standard is, I guess that term predatory lending like stands out to me like red flag, alarm bells. But at the same time, I think also just of capitalism, where you know you charge whatever the market can demand. So if somebody does pay that, then there's you know a service that they're offering that is you know they'll take them up on it, and it makes sense. Is there a way to reconcile that, or is it just in your mind? Hey, if it's above this percent of what the others are doing, then it's predatory lending.
That's why I use the term industry standard, because per the California state statute, there's not a cap on what a broker or an investor can charge for a hard money transaction. There's not a cap on the points they can charge, the interest rate they can charge, the default rate, or the fees. What is going to happen in the event of a litigation, whether that's through foreclosure or it's through any other event, is in standing in front of a judge, the judge is going to look at what the industry standard is. And that's why I use that term so regularly, is because that's going to be a determining factor in any litigation, industry standard. So if you're in excess of what, quote unquote, an industry standard would be, they're going to deem that as predatory lending.
Okay. So makes sense.
Yeah. A lot of what I do is it's preparing for the worst case. I tell everyone I crush dreams, because I tell people what they need to be concerned with right now doing a transaction. That's when things are the most liked and the most welcomed. It's in the event of a loss on the value of the property, on the resale, or when people stop making payments. That's when the situations normally arise. So what my job is now is to properly prepare my client for the worst case scenario in the future.
And what about lenders and the due diligence on the offering? What are the things you look for?
This isn't always, but I found it very common that a broker has the objective to make the transaction because they want to receive a certain commission. Their level of diligence may or may not be that extensive. The borrower needs the transaction or needs the money, so they will present information that may or may not be accurate. So on behalf of the lender, we really dig through what is being provided and review everything. For example, a borrower says, I've done these 10 flips. What we'll do is we'll pull up the property records on those 10 properties to make sure that their name was actually an owner on that property, that they actually had ownership. They purchased it, they flipped it, see what the purchase price is, see when they purchased it, see what the resale value was, see when they resold it, see if there was a notice of default or any type of foreclosure on that property. We just dig through the provided information to see if there's any discrepancies.
How do you charge?
Again, it depends. So my charge is based on the need of the client. Some clients call me and say, you know what, Jamie, I did everything that can be done. Just give me some documents on this. Help me properly collateralize the transaction by doing your note, your deed of trust, and everything else. And then from there, the price would be reflective of that. Other people, which is common as salespeople are great with marketing, they're great with making relationships, but I haven't found them to be that good with paperwork. So I will be the paper pusher, if you will, and take care of all of the research and the diligence and the documentation for a transaction. So everything depends on the needs of the client.
If somebody is looking to borrow and they have quotes from different brokers or lenders, and they have, you know, 5 different PDF quotes and they want you to take a look at it, what would that cost?
I take money out of my pocket every single day. I actually wouldn't charge someone for that, as horrible or silly as that may say. Reason being is I want the hard money lending industry to stay alive, and I don't want people to be taken granted for, because I saw what that does firsthand. If someone has, whether it's a broker, lender, borrower, has any type of transaction in which there is an interest and they want me to just take a quick review of it, I'm so experienced in looking at the documentation that I can tear apart any document, PDF, Word document in the matter of minutes and see where the areas of concern are, where there are no areas of concern. It's really easy for me. And I don't mean that in an egotistical way, but I've been looking at paperwork and documents for over 16 years now. I know how to sort through it. So something like that, like I said, is so easy for me that I cannot find the justification to charge for it.
With those, you know, different quotes, what's a common red flag that you've come across?
A common red flag that I come across is one stating that they are obtaining the financing for business purpose, such as fix and flip, but they're using all of the money that they have in their savings account to buy the property, and they've never owned another piece of real estate. Normally, that's a red flag that that's an owner-occupied property, and they have been coached to lie about their use of the loan funds and what they're going to do with the property to get the loan.
Got it. So they're using their own money to put into some of the property. They need a loan to get the rest of the money, and they're going to actually live in it versus flip it.
Right. It's common for someone to first go to a conventional lender, and a conventional lender can't provide the financing because, say, it's someone who's self-employed and they have had a loss in their income over 1 year over the other. They don't have 2 years of steady income, or they haven't filed their taxes, or they just moved and started a new job. for whatever reason, they would be denied institutional financing. That institutional lender knows, hey, I can get a hard money loan, but they can't note that property as a primary residence because all of the regulations and proceedings for that loan changes. So what we're going to do is we're going to say it's non-owner occupied and they submit it to the broker. Well, again, if someone has $80,000 in their savings and they're using $79,000 to buy a home and they've never owned a home before and they're not in the business of fixing and flipping, more than likely you have an owner-occupied property there.
Jamie, what's your best real estate investing advice ever?
Know your investment. And what it sounds so silly. It really does. But using my father again as an example, had he done his diligence to confirm that the permits were in place, he would know that he was being presented false information. I have other investors that do loans with borrowers that fix and flip properties, but their portfolio gets so versed. They have so many properties, they can't manage it. And then they end up losing properties and having to foreclose. Knowing your investment, what you're getting into, and not taking anything for face value, actually taking it upon yourself to do your own research and diligence, will save someone every single time. It's when you don't do your diligence, don't look at the property, or take someone else's opinion for whatever it's worth and base your decision off of that, that I always see someone losing.
Do you work with clients throughout the U.S.?
Not throughout the U.S. I work with clients in Texas, Georgia, Pennsylvania, California, and Nevada. Reason being is because I need to be up on the regulations and laws and ordinances to be able to properly advise anyone.
Out of those states, are there any that are more lender or borrower friendly?
Georgia is very borrower and lender friendly. It's a non-broker state, which means that somebody that is a lawyer or a title company can do a transaction and close a transaction. It doesn't have to be closed with someone licensed through the Department of Business Oversight or the Bureau of Real Estate. So it's a lot more compatible to a transaction or to an individual doing a transaction.
You ready for the best ever lightning round?
I'm ready.
All right. First, a quick word from our best ever partners. Are you looking to buy in Memphis, Tennessee, or do you need some property management help in Memphis, Tennessee? Well, then go talk to Douglas Skipworth. Episode number 455 is when I spoke to him. He's got a company called Crestcore, and they specialize in real estate and property management in Memphis. Go to crestcore.com. That's C-R-E-S-T-C-O-R-E.com. Best ever deal you've done?
Helping elderly people. And if you want me to elaborate on that, a gentleman that could not get any type of financing, and I actually found he was about to lose his property. He had a reverse mortgage. He was losing everything. I found a lender that was able to help him and help him to save his home. This was a primary residence, and it was about 10, 15 years ago, but it saved this 86-year-old man's home.
Best ever book you've read?
Four Agreements.
Who wrote that?
Don Miguel Ruiz.
Okay, The Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. All right. What was one takeaway you had from that book?
To not judge. To not judge is not carry incidents with you. You don't know what happened in the other person's day, what's going through their mind. What someone says or does is more of a reflection of them and not you, and you shouldn't internalize that and make a judgment based off of that. It's just a really great method to be free and have personal freedom.
Oh, yeah. Sign me up for that philosophy. I will read that book. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. It's 99.9% of the time, it's about what's going on in their life, because we're all kind of inwardly focused with how we internalize things and process things, and really it's not necessarily what we're not giving somebody, it's kind of what's going on and what's on their mind and how they're approaching their day and the situation.
Exactly. It's a really easy read too. It's a book I actually always have in my office. I just ran to pick up who the author was because I didn't remember, but it's a great book.
Best ever personal growth experience, and what'd you learn from it?
This was actually one I just had with Tom Poole. He was the head of the Bureau of Real Estate, and he retired, and I was at his retirement lunch. And he stated this, and it was something that he was told and he's lived his career by, and it hit home. He said, everything you do counts. Whether it is sending an email or whether it is giving a homeless man lunch, everything you do counts because there's someone on that receiving end, or there's someone that is going to come across.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, no small actions.
Yeah, everything you do counts.
Awesome.
What's the biggest mistake you've made in real estate or business so far?
A client, one of my first clients that I had, this is going back 6 years ago on the hard money lending, I went to wire his $700,000 and I missed the numbers, mixed them up, and I wired them to the wrong account.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to someone.
So we did get the money back. It did take a week, and it, yeah, that was my biggest mistake.
After you realized that you did that, what was your immediate next step?
I had to contact everyone, and that's from Tom Poole. That was one of the other things that I picked up from him, and fortunately I'd already established, is we're all going to make mistakes. We're all human. But the person making the mistake or affected by the mistake that I made, such as my client in this instance, I should be the first one to tell him, not an escrow or not the bank. So if I ever am to make a mistake, I need to own up to it right away and tell the people that are affected. So my first response in that situation is I told the broker at the time I was working for, oopsie, I think I did this wrong, and of course apologized to the lender. I still work with that lender, but it did take 3 years for me to regain confidence in me.
And what's the best ever place the best ever listeners can reach you?
My cell phone would probably be the best, and that's 707-495-1038.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your advice with the best ever listeners and your expertise in the hard money industry as a hard money consultant. You gave us a lot of really good information. The story that started your trek into this industry as a consultant with your father and his friends, or his father and the others that he was in with. I think you said he didn't know them. And then the three different groups you represent, from brokers, borrowers, and lenders. And then the learnings and the lessons that you have and the things you look for each of those individuals or groups. So thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your advice with best ever listeners, and hope you have the best ever day.
Thank you. You too.
Did you achieve all your real estate goals in 2015? Well, if you did, congratulations. Fist bump to you. If you didn't, then go to coachwithtrevor.com. Trevor McGregor is my business coach, my real estate coach. He's also been a guest on the show, episode 320. He is offering a free coaching session for the best ever listeners. Just go to coachwithtrevor.com and it'll help you to achieve your real estate goals in 2016.